Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Every February, there's a big focus on cardiovascular health. February is American Heart Month. But it takes on special significance in the wake of Buffalo Bills safety Damar Hamlin's collapse on the field last month. And joining me for tonight's Medical Monday conversation, a heart attack survivor, Florence Champagne. She's also CEO of the Open My Heart Foundation and cardiologist Dr. Paul Underwood. If you have a comment or a question about your cardiovascular health, how is your heart? What do you do to make sure that it stays healthy? Give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. First of all, let me welcome both of you, Florence and Dr. Underwood, to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Florence, I want to ask you, first of all, how are you feeling? How is your heart doing?
Okay. Thank you so much for having me once again.
Sure.
I am doing well today. I'm just excited and getting ready and looking forward to our two-day event this year for Heart Disease Awareness Month.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking about that, but I want to talk, first of all, to the issue of heart health, because as I said before, there's so much focus on it right now. But you said you're doing well.
Yes, I am doing well today. Thank you.
Well, absolutely. I did also want to ask you, as I mentioned, you know, you had a heart attack back in 2012, and very, very different from what we know happened to Damar Hamlin on the football field. But when that happened, what went through your mind a month ago?
Well, really what went through my mind is that you can be a ticking time bomb. And especially those who are very active and not knowing it and not really presenting the symptoms. And the way I look at it, when I had my heart attack, for example, I did not present the obvious symptoms. And they know now, through more research, women present differently when they have symptoms of a heart attack. So I lacked the obvious symptoms. And it was more of a slow progressive reduction in oxygen. And I believe they call it like a silent ischemia or ischemia. It's when the oxygen is slowly being reduced. So it wasn't like the crushing chest pains. So my arteries were blocked, and I later found out it was 99.9% blocked. And as I said, the pain was not like a crushing pain for me. And I believe when some people are very athletic or active, they could experience something like the silent heart attack and not know it, not knowing that they're lacking oxygen or there's a lack of blood flow. And Dr. Underwood could correct me if I'm wrong, but I just did not present in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally understand when someone drops dead of a heart attack.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Underwood, I think it's worth noting when we talk about the Damar Hamlin case, the explaining the difference between a heart attack and the cardiac arrest that we know that he had.
Yeah. So I think that a lot of it is a matter of terminology. And so oftentimes people think of them as being together. But really, a heart attack occurs when the blood supply to your heart is blocked off. There are three blood vessels that feed your heart, everyone's heart, and if one of them, you know, becomes blocked, that's when you'll have pain, like a cramping pain, but it's your heart that's hurting, and that will, you know, have people double over and they will seek help. Whereas with the cardiac arrest, your heart has an abnormal rhythm that doesn't pump any blood. And so people will pass out because there's no blood flow to their brain. And if you have a cardiac arrest, you need electricity immediately, shock, a counter shock, to be able to get the normal rhythm restored.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about heart health on this Medical Monday conversation that we are having. If you have any questions about your health regarding your cardiovascular health, give us a call again at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You know, Dr. Underwood, I would argue that we've learned so much about heart health over the past, say, 20 years ago, and yet it still remains one of the biggest killers, particularly for African Americans and African American women. Why do you believe that continues to be the case?
Well, I think a lot of it is based on the lifestyles that we have, that we have come to have. So if you can say, remember 50 years, 100 years ago when infections were very important, but now with such good antibiotics, those are no longer the issue. But now we have high blood pressure, the obesity epidemic has brought along a lot of diabetes, and we also have the cholesterol and certainly the fast foods and the food industry that we have that makes us ripe for developing heart attacks, and that is exactly what has happened. So I don't think that we're going to make a lot of strong progress unless we look at it from multifactorial. So we won't have enough coronary stents, and there's not enough bypass surgery that's going to be able to treat everyone. A lot of the control is going to have to come internally from ourselves in terms of making sure that our numbers are good, like the blood sugar, the blood pressure, and our blood cholesterol.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about heart health. Lines are open if you have a question for the doctor or for Florence. Florence, I wanted to ask you, since your heart attack in 2012, how has your lifestyle changed?
Well, of course, I watch what I eat. I really try to stay away from not only the fat foods, but fatty foods and the fried foods and meat. So I try to incorporate more of a grain diet, more beans and fresh fruits and vegetables in my diet, as well as taking up swimming now. You have to do something you like. It could be walking. I take swimming classes and things like that. One of the important things I wanted to say about as far as it's important for women to understand the other risk factors. I know that Dr. Underwood was talking about obesity and high blood pressure and things like that, but other life events such as pregnancy, and researchers have shown that stress is a factor, and the body-mind connection impacts your overall well-being and your family history. So I think women need to understand those, as well as cancer treatments and things like that, that help to bring on heart disease as well. So it's very important for women to learn and understand that.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about health, heart health. Let's go to Cruzita, calling from Maryland. Cruzita, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to make those aware. I was actually having symptoms of shortness of breath and just some real difficulty breathing. I went to the ER, had an EKG, had X-ray, and it went undetected. And then I knew something wasn't right, and I asked for a cardiology consult. I was able to get the consult. I had a stress test, and that's where it was detected. I was going into atrial fibrillation, and it was explained to me that I had some abnormal cells that was affecting my sinus node, and it was causing me to to have the shortness of breath, but the practitioners missed it. And had I not been persistent and being really in tune to my body, I could have just passed out and, you know, passed away from that.
Mm. Dr. Underwood, can you share your thoughts about what Cruzita just shared with us?
Absolutely. So I think that now it's more important that people understand what their risk factors are and seek to control them themselves. In the past, you could go to the doctor and they would look at you and say, this is what you need, take this pill, come back and see me. Now we have to be much more proactive at our healthcare. And as he has been, be very persistent and follow up with the symptoms until you get the answer that it's correct, that you're getting on the right path. It's not uncommon, particularly for African-Americans and African-American women, that people in the emergency rooms don't think that you would be having a heart issue. They want to say that you're having a stomach issue or it's anxiety or it's anything but your heart. But in fact, you know, you African-American women are at the highest risk of having heart disease. You know, no matter how they may look on the outside, it's what's on the inside that counts. So you really do have to be very persistent to make sure that you have the workup and follow through that's going to be important. Mm.
Cruzita, thank you so much for your phone call, and we wish you the best of health. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about heart health tonight during our Medical Monday conversation. But we also want to take a moment to talk about getting your party on for a good cause. There's a gala that is coming up through the Open Your Heart Foundation, the foundation that Florence is the CEO of. Florence, tell us first about the foundation and the gala.
So the Open My Heart Foundation was born out of my experiences with heart disease. Mm-hmm. And just to speak a little bit to Christina's point, I was misdiagnosed several times going back and forth to the ER. And out of my frustration, I started the Open My Heart Foundation. And it is all about advocacy, and it is all about standing up for yourself. And sometimes it's a lack of coverage, to be honest with you. It's all about the dollar. So we are having a two-day event this year, and the first day is on next Friday, February 17th. And we're going to address things like advocacy. We're going to talk about the historical injustices in health, social determinants of health, and healthcare access. And then on that Saturday is the actual gala where we're honoring heart attack and stroke survivors in a big gala form and where we're doing fundraising as well.
Mm-hmm. How can people find out more information about this as well as get their hands on tickets?
Okay, they can just go to our website at www.openmyheartfoundation.org, or they can give us a call at 240-389-4361.
That's 240-389-4361, or you can go online at Open My Heart Foundation. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And don't forget, that information will be posted on our website on WHUR.com after 8:30 tonight if you miss it on the program. Let's go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Charisse, calling from Tacoma Park, what's on your mind?
Hi, I'd like to know if you could share, the doctor could share, foods or any sort of therapeutics that can actually strengthen the heart after some maybe issue, heart issue. I've never seen so much, never heard of even myocarditis growing up since over the last 3 years. But can you please share what could build up the heart, strengthen the heart muscle?
Certainly. So it's a very good question because that's something that we have some control over. The the thing to help the heart is to exercise the heart, right? So getting into a walking program so it gradually builds strength, and then other exercises, particularly exercises that you breathe through, you know, that you don't have to grunt through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So for eating, if you keep the salt level low, it's going to keep your blood pressure down. When your blood pressure goes up, your heart has to put against that high blood pressure. I can wear it out. So salt level low is important. For blockages in the arteries, it's better to have a plant-based diet. And that's what I was saying about not eating so much meat, because the cholesterol, the fat that's in the plant, is mm-hmm. much firmer, less likely to rupture and cause heart attack than the softer fat that comes with animal meat, like on a steak, where it's real, real soft at room temperature. Those are basic things that everyone can do. There may be other foods such as, say, a red rice yeast extract, which might lower the cholesterol to some degree. There's not really any foods that specifically strengthen heart muscle, but it's really just an adjunct, like keeping your blood sugar under control, keeping your blood pressure under control, keeping your blood cholesterol under control. That's the dietary component that's going to help strengthen your heart along with exercise.
All right. Cherise, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is our Medical Monday conversation. We're talking about your cardiovascular health, your heart health. The doctor is in, along with Florence Champagne, who is the CEO of the Open My Heart Foundation. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. We will continue to take your calls up until right before 8 o'clock. We're going to take a quick break, but don't forget you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. George calling all the way from California. We're going to talk to you next. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We'll be back on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is American Heart Month, and we're continuing our Medical Monday conversation about heart health with my guests, heart attack survivor Florence Champagne. She is also the CEO of the Open My Heart Foundation, and cardiologist Dr. Paul Underwood. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. George calling from California. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind is that, first of all, happy Black History Month, and I want to thank the doctor and the survivor for being who they are. I'm a PA, and I've been practicing about 35 years in internal medicine family practice. And what I found is that for African Americans, there is an institutional and structural racism that affects our care. In fact, the young lady saying, and this young Black woman here who says that, you know, they weren't evaluated properly. It's not that they're not evaluated properly, it's that people tend to think of that we are complaining. And, you know, and again, it's advocacy, but also the structural and institutional racism components in the system itself. You know, and even if you have money, you know, as we're finding out with women in terms of infant mortality, they're having a worse outcome. And that just has to do more than with us, because we always get blamed for us. It's mostly what's happened to us. That's all I have to say.
George, thank you so much. What about what George is saying, Dr. Underwood? Obviously, people like Florence have had to become their own advocates, but how do you reverse those disparities even when you come armed with knowledge about disparities and you know your body and you know something isn't right?
So I do think that healthcare has changed over the years. And in the past, you go to the doctor and do whatever the doctor says. In the current environment, it is up to the patient to get the best out of their health care. And these incidents have occurred so frequently that I think if we did not know it, we are all very aware that structural racism, systematic racism does exist, and it does make it difficult for African Americans in particular to get the care that they need. But the awareness that if a person knows what their symptoms are, that awareness should push them through to, and unfortunately, sometimes try over and over and over again until they get the help that they need. Unfortunately, sometimes people have catastrophic events as they are trying to navigate the system. As it stands now, any hospital that you would go to would say that they don't have structural racism. They may admit that it happened in the past, but they don't actively profess that now. However, those individuals that work in the hospital may have biases, and they may have misbelief, a misunderstanding about symptoms and recognition and differences between women and men in terms of heart symptoms. And so the individual has to navigate the healthcare system. Sometimes we have to be a little bit more demanding. Sometimes we have to be more willing to, say, accept second opinions because the first opinion doesn't seem to be getting anywhere. And as time goes on, we will eventually fiddle away with this until we all have equitable care.
Mm-hmm. Florence, I'm sure you have some thoughts about that as well, based on your experience. Florence, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, I totally agree with Dr. Underwood. One thing I would add to that is that when you are actually experiencing the pain, you're actually suffering. And it's difficult, I think, to navigate a whole system or a bureaucracy, as if you will, when you are in it, when you are experiencing the pain. I would suggest, and what I tell people, is to take someone along with you. Call a family member or a friend or someone that can be your advocate or be your voice or even your eyes or ears, because they may hear something you don't hear because you're dealing with the pain.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, we had a guest call in, Dr. Underwood, and she mentioned something called myocarditis. Is that the correct term?
Yes.
What is that?
So myocarditis simply means that there's an inflammation of the heart. And when the heart becomes inflamed, then it doesn't pump well, and people are prone for heart failure. Myocarditis can have several causes, and I think most commonly, the causes, we don't know what it is. It could be like an immune reaction. It can sometimes follow an infection, like a cold. And so it's like a cold goes to the heart, like a virus goes to the heart, is another common cause of myocarditis. Some people are sensitive to alcohol. So drinking alcohol, typically excessive alcohol, can actually cause inflammation of the heart and damage to the heart as well. But the term myocarditis really just means that the heart muscle is inflamed, and that consequently leads to heart failure.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, one of the callers mentioned also strengthening the heart, because we do know that the heart is a muscle. But let's talk about this kind of in layman's terms. If you go to the gym and you grab a dumbbell and you curl it, you build up a bicep, or if you get up under a bar and you do your squats and you can build your calf muscles or you can build your thigh muscles and the like. But this muscle is a different kind of muscle. It is inside. Is there a way to strengthen or improve your heart function in any way similar to lifting weights or exercise?
There is. And so in say one or two words, it's called cardiac rehabilitation. And this is often done with people who have had heart attacks, and it's part of the recovery phase. But what it is based on, as you said, when you take and lift a weight, you're putting a strain on the muscle, and the muscle will grow stronger. For people, the blood pressure is what the heart has to pump against. And the easier the heart can get the blood out, the more efficiently it will pump. So we're not looking necessarily at strength, we're looking at efficiency, so it pumps better. The strength will come, though, and it's with walking and aerobic exercise, not necessarily anaerobic exercise, which is what weightlifting consists of. When you have to grunt and bear down, push against something, that raises your blood pressure quickly. I mean, like over 1 second, you suddenly tripled or quadrupled the amount of stress on your heart. So it's not that type of activity that we would want to do. We would have you do something more like walking a block every day, or go to your doctor and ask them for an exercise prescription where they can have you get on a treadmill and then see what your heart rate range is, and then say that, you know, you should exercise until you get to 80% of that with 30 minutes every day. And that's kind of the exercise prescription that you would get with the cardiac rehab program.
Florence, I know you touched on a little bit of this, but it just occurred to me that it's been 11 years since your heart attack in 2012. Tell us a little bit more about how your life has changed. What medicines, I know you mentioned swimming, but, you know, what other medicines and other kinds of practices that you've been participating in since you got out of the hospital in 2012?
Well, I think there's always an adjustment being made in, like, my medications, for example. So my pressure tends to go up and down. So sometimes it could be too high for too long, and then it's brought down. And then sometimes it could be too low. So I think the doctors constantly make an adjustment to your medications. So it's with the med management and exercise and diet, as well as monitoring my heart, like regular visits to the cardiologist to make sure, you know, I'm on track. I also wear a pacemaker, and so that needs to be monitored. I have a home monitor where they can read when I do my self-readings at home. It goes straight to the cardiologist's office so they can monitor my heart over time. Mm-hmm. And so it's a regular, I mean, it's not a one-and-done type of thing. When you have heart disease, it's a constant thing that they're monitoring to make sure that we're safe, we're okay, and there's no reoccurrence. Mm.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Sean, calling from Clinton. Sean, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you.
Sure.
If the doctor could speak to how our young people are being affected by heart disease and heart attacks, it seemed like I've been hearing people in their, you know, late 20s, early 30s, having heart attacks and strokes and things like that. Could you speak to that? Because I know personally my concern is, you know, how they eat, of course, and that's probably the biggest issue, how they eat and how it's affecting their heart.
Okay. Dr. Underwood?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is definitely a problem that we have noticed as well, that people are developing serious heart disease at a younger age, and it's more likely to be in minority communities like African Americans. One of the largest drivers for heart disease, serious heart disease, is the obesity epidemic and diabetes. And so you can imagine that by the time someone is 18 or 19 years old, if they are very obese, they likely would have maturity onset, type 2 diabetes, when they're in their early 20s, and then follow that, you know, within about 10 years or so by having some of the blockages show up in your heart, which is much younger than the 65-year-old person that we typically think of as having heart attacks. As you said, the diet certainly is a very important component of that, and not understanding the interplay between particularly the cholesterol, the salt, and the energy, the calorie intake that people have, That misunderstanding can lead to lifelong bad habits that will end in premature cardiovascular disease.
Okay. Sean, thank you so much for your phone call. I do want to run through a couple of issues that are really pertinent to this. And first of all, you alluded to it a bit, Florence, but I want to talk about paying attention to your numbers. When someone says pay attention to your numbers, what does that mean?
Okay. Well, for me, it's my blood pressure, and my A1C. I am pre-diabetic or borderline diabetic, I should say. So you have to pay attention to your A1C levels and your blood pressure levels.
Mm-hmm. Why is that important, Dr. Underwood?
So those are the major risk factors, and those are things that you have control over yourself. Now, when you go to the doctor's office and have your blood pressure checked, that's just one moment in time. But your heart has to pump against this pressure continuously. So having your pressure low when you're at home and every day when you're at work, having your blood pressure controlled is extremely important, and it's very important that the individual knows what this is. It matters a little bit that your doctor knows what your blood pressure is, but it's more important that the person knows what their blood pressure is. Mm-hmm. Similarly, the blood sugar is the same way. I mean, your doctor can take the test and tell you, but if you have control over your diet and have the way of checking your blood sugar, then you will know if you are in control or not. Mm. One of the big things that's happened as this healthcare crisis has come on is that a lot of the onus for the healthcare is placed back on the patient. And so it's important for the individual to know, you know, how they're best situated, and then interact with the healthcare system to get those things that you can't get at home.
Mm. What about the symptoms? We know that women present differently than men, but overall, if you may have a symptom or symptoms of heart disease or a heart attack, how important is it, Dr. Underwood, not to ignore them?
It's extremely important not to ignore your heart symptoms. That no one wants to have a heart attack, and everyone would rather it be your stomach, like an upset stomach, bad food, or maybe it came from stress and you just need to lay down and rest. I mean, that would be ideal for everyone, but unfortunately, that is not always the case. So if you experience heart symptoms, it's best to get them checked out. It can be done supposedly quickly in an emergency room, typically with just an electrocardiogram, you know, the EKG tells us a lot of information. And if necessary, there are some blood tests that can let us know pretty quickly if there's any issue going on with your heart or not. And fortunately, if it's not your heart, then you can worry about other things that it could be. But if it is your heart and you let it continue, there is a chance that you can have permanent heart damage, or you could have the cardiac arrest that we talked about before. If your heart becomes irritated and flips into an abnormal heart rhythm, that's not consistent with living.
Mm. You did.
And if I could add to that.
Yeah, go right ahead, please.
So, you know, you may not know that it's your heart. So this, it's important to have shows like this. We are educating people. But if you're experiencing shortness of breath, for example, like I did, I had no clue it was related to my heart. So, but if you hear things, if you know about them, say, for example, I had back pain, lower back pain. I did not know that that was a symptom, that it was heart-related. I had a jaw pain. I did not know as a woman that was a symptom of a heart issue. So you may not know what the symptoms are, but, you know, hearing things like this now on the show, it could be, you know, something that is heart-related. And someone called me and said, you know what, I heard you talk about this possibly being a symptom. I said, yes, it is a symptom. You should go talk to your doctor. You should go and see if you can get a referral for a cardiologist. So it's good to educate the public, but, you know, someone at home may not know that they are actually having a symptom of a heart-related issue or that could lead to a heart event. And one of the other things I'd like to add is that what we're trying to do at the Open My Heart Foundation is to advocate more for standardized cardiac screenings, just like there is breast cancer screenings that are standardized now. And they had to go through a lot to get to that point to pass legislation to make sure that there's regular breast cancer screenings. Well, there's not regular cardiac screenings. Mm-hmm. It's usually when it's too late that we find out that there's a cardiac issue.
Dr. Underwood, why would lower back pain or jaw pain in a woman be indicative of a heart disease or even a heart attack?
So women are certainly different than men. Many of the medical textbooks are based on men and the symptoms of men. And perhaps if they were written by women, then that would just be the standard and we would understand. It's not known why women may present differently. It could be the perception of pain. Women are typically caretakers, and they'll put everyone in front of their own health. So they take care of everyone else before they take care of themselves. And so putting off discomfort is something that women typically do. When pregnancy and delivery are considered painful issues, and so perhaps women are, I won't say more accustomed to pain, but the pain that we're speaking of may not be as severe as the most severe pain that they've had, and so they may not take it quite as seriously to take note of it. I'll say that with women, some of the unusual presentations of heart problems, as Florence said, are neck, jaw, shoulder, and back discomfort, shortness of breath, pain in one or both arms. So certainly if you bump yourself in the arm, it should hurt. But if you have a pain that comes on for no reason at all, particularly if it gets worse while you're walking and it seems to ease up when you're resting, that could be a sign of heart attack. Mm-hmm. Nausea and vomiting, migraine and fatigue, those are symptoms that seem to be more common in women having heart attacks when you compare them with men's symptoms of a heart attack.
I want to talk about stress and anxiety, particularly as it pertains to work. There are some people who have jobs that are normally stressful. One of the things that kind of comes to mind, or the kind of jobs that may come to mind, are, for example, police officers, firefighters, hospital emergency room workers. And we know that stress and anxiety can have a deleterious impact on heart health. But on the other side of that, Dr. Underwood, is it possible that if someone has a stressful job, they know it's stressful, they've been doing it for a while, that the body is used to bearing the stress of that kind of job?
So that's a very interesting concept, and it gets us more into how people are living and what they must deal with. So for Africans of African descent who have lived in America, it has been very stressful. I mean, there's no doubt that this has been a stressful environment. And we can see that in terms of outcomes, that we have more diabetes, we have more high blood pressure, and we have more heart disease and more cancer for that matter, right? And that is likely a reflection of the stress that we have that has been institutionalized that we put up with every day. To your point, for the individual in those stressful situations, understanding that stress is that of part of a component, it's very important to have the mind and body connection and to do things with your mind to help to control the rest of your body. And so that type of connection, the feedback and spirituality can become extremely important in terms of trying to resist that stress. The stress is caused by adrenaline. So when your body, that fight or flight mechanism, so when your body sees a lion, you know, that fear, that's adrenaline. And that's the same thing that a firefighter or a police officer or emergency room technician would feel when you're put in that stressful situation. That chemical, that adrenaline, will burn up. It revs up. It's like fuel for your heart, and it just revs it up, and it will eventually wear your heart out. And so many of the medicines that we use to help people who have heart failure block that hormone so that it doesn't pound on the heart so much. So it's very important, and I don't think that you bury it. It's just that it bothers you, and it can cause you to die prematurely. And it's important to, stressful jobs will be there, but it's important to counterbalance that stress with mind and body wellness.
Well, then that brings me to another question. We often hear about younger people who are adrenaline junkies, people who are involved in extreme sports, whether it be you know motorcycle related sports, rock climbing, skydiving, and even high speed skateboarding and the like. The term adrenaline junkies, I know it is a term of art, but even for those who seek that kind of rush, does that have a negative impact on heart health?
So those activities are more like sporting activities.
Yes.
And I said earlier that exercise is good for the heart. So it's like if you're playing football, I mean, we just finished with the Super Bowl, that linebacker on the other side of you is just like the lion. So your body needs to be revved up to be able to counteract that. Okay? But once the game is over, then you should go back to your normal self and not have to have that stressful feeling like you need to, that you're running from someone all the time. The problem that people face in everyday life, not necessarily when they're doing their sport, the stresses that you face when you can't pay your bills or when you have a negative experience in an emergency room, or the job, applying for jobs, that type of stress, it's something that stays with you continuously 24/7, and it doesn't really like go away, like exercising. When you take off your skate, you you're back to normal again, and that is likely the difference in how that chronic stress wears a person down.
Mm-hmm. One of the final points I did want to list, and this is certainly for you, Florence. Did you have any family history of heart disease?
Oh, yes, I did. But I really didn't connect the dots. I knew, that there was my grandmother who had a massive stroke that debilitated her ability to function as normal. My great-grandmother as well. My father... my uncle had, I believe, 2 bypass surgeries. I did not connect the dots. I really didn't think that anything was wrong. I didn't even think about the word heart when I was going through. I just knew that there was something wrong. It wasn't until afterwards that I learned about family history and the importance of it.
I see. Talk to me a little bit about that importance, Dr. Underwood, of knowing your family history before it impacts you.
Yeah, I think that oftentimes, illnesses, diseases, illnesses tend to be swept under the rug, and people don't like to speak about their experiences, particularly to their family. But it is very important, because some of these cardiovascular problems, these heart problems, are passed on genetically, right? From, you're more prone for it. Like the way that you handle cholesterol or the way that you handle salt for high blood pressure is passed on from, grandparents to the parents to the child and so forth, right? So understanding that you may have this risk factor is very important so that you can start looking for it early and take care of it before it becomes a problem.
I only have a minute or so left, and I'd like to hear some final thoughts from you, Florence, as you not only look forward to this mission of heart health for your organization, but just kind of looking at the landscape of where we are regarding heart health in 2023, particularly for Black women.
Well, like I said, some of the things that I've learned to do was to make changes and adjustments in my eating. And like Dr. Underwood talked about, more of a plant-based diet. Mm-hmm. So I'm juicing more and doing things like that, trying to get my exercise in different ways. And as far as the future with us, it's all about educating. We do support groups. We bring in different speakers. And the body-mind connection is so important. Talk about stress, you know, because we are the bearers. The Black women are just the bearers of pain, suffering. We take on everybody else's problems. So we have to make sure we take care of ourselves. And it's like putting the mask on yourself first before you can help someone else. Advocacy is so important, and fighting for our rights, making sure that not only the word gets out, but there's more cardiac screenings on the front end. So we can kind of know where we are, know our numbers, and that's something that was not drilled in us or that we are made aware of until something happens, mm-hmm. until there is an event. But these are things that could be changed on the front end, just like we have to have a breast cancer, breast exams on a regular basis. We need more cardiac screenings as well, and that's one of the things that we want to get out.
Florence Champagne and Dr. Paul Underwood, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and your expertise during this American Heart Month. We appreciate you talking to us.
Thank you very much, Carol.
Sure thing. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, February 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.